I think one of the great joys of preaching is to be able to go to a new place and to meet new people and to make friends and develop close associations, even though sometimes they may be brief. And I don't know of anything more pleasant than that except one, and that's to come back again. And to see people that you have met before, many of whom you can't recall their names, but you'll learn them again, and some of whom you can, and just remember a good time and a good association from days gone by and in another time, and to be able to come back. And that's the situation this evening that I have, to be able to be back in Payton City again. Jack said that it was about 4 years ago. Actually, it was the October 1983. But that's what happens to you when you get as old as he is. He just can't remember. But I remember, and I remember on a Saturday morning that the elders all took me out to eat at Elby's up in New Martinsville. And we all sat around and we laughed, and I think it was just the night before that they asked me to come back. That was in October of 1983. And they said, can you come back in the spring of 1989? Ha ha, you know, long way off. And I said, well, I'll have to check my calendar, but yeah, I probably can make that. And they said, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was Roger Smith who kind of, ha ha, yeah, you come back and the elders will buy you breakfast again. I haven't forgotten that, by the way. It's good to see him. It's good to see all of you. And especially good to be able to meet John and Joan Gertler and to be in their home. We've just passed in the hall a couple of times this afternoon. I didn't get in until about 5 o'clock. And so we haven't even hardly had time to say hello, much less to become acquainted. But we're looking forward, I'm looking forward to getting to know them and their family and to be able to spend time with them. And I've already come to appreciate and love Brother John, because as I unpacked my suitcase, I found out that I didn't pack a belt. And he let me borrow his. And I don't know what he's wearing tonight, but I do know that I can appreciate a man who is literally this evening upholding the preaching of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So good to be able just to be in their home, and I look forward after the service tonight to go back to their house and get acquainted with them, and something tells me we're going to have a fun and enjoyable week in their home and get to know one another better. Take your Bibles, if you will, tonight and turn to 1 Corinthians 16. And I think we will look at a little verse of Scripture in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13 that I think will be a good place for us to begin not only the lesson, but the week that we have together. It's a little passage. It's not very long. Perhaps you at some point in life have even committed it to memory. And yet I think this passage of Scripture, this one verse, even though brief, speaks volumes to what Christianity really is all about. Listen to Paul. He says, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. Now, I think if that verse is telling us anything at all, it is telling us of the need and of the value and of the indispensability of courage in the life of God's child, the Christian. Let me ask you a question. What do you suppose ever happened to courage? Remember courage? That muscle of character that gives a nation its pride, that gives a home its purpose, that gives a person the will to excel and achieve and to rise above the crowd and to stand apart and to be different and to stand for something. That's courage. And whatever happened to that? You know, people, when we lose the will to stand apart, we've lost everything there is to lose. And it takes courage to stand, and it takes courage to stand apart, especially when we have to stand alone. Maybe you don't need a lesson on courage. Maybe you in your walk with God in your spiritual life, maybe you are a bastion of courage. I don't know. Maybe you're a stronghold of strength. But it's a weakness with me. Because there are times when I'll have a tendency to go into a spiritual slouch. When I ought to stand. I run when I ought to fight. I give in when I ought to hold out and stand firm. And I need to be reminded again of these words and others that we're going to look at this evening. Of the need to somehow find the resiliency to stand. To have the courage to live for God in a godless world and to just do what's right. Paul said, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. It's called courage. I think one of the greatest myths of our American age, society, is this picture that all Americans are a bunch of rugged John Wayne type individualists. And that's far from the case. We're not individualists. The fact is, we have the tendency to be conformist. That is, we will go to great lengths, you see, to keep from being different from anybody else because we don't want to be odd. We don't want to be different. One of our greatest fears, I suppose, is the fear of being ostracized, rejected, cut off, put down by the group. And as a result, ridicule is a pain that far too many people are not willing to bear. Standing alone when you're outnumbered is not easy. But it's the greatest challenge that you and I will ever be called to face. Turn over to the 12th chapter of the book of Romans. And I want to look with you this evening at verses 1 and 2. And just spend a good part of our time in the text itself looking at some things in regard to the principles that we've introduced in your hearing tonight. The Apostle Paul talks to us in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, concerning the need to stand alone against the world. Listen to him. He says, I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Now I want to notice from these two verses, six observations from the text in regard to what it takes to stand alone. Six observations. You might want to note them. First of all, I want you to see that the challenge that the Apostle Paul gives in the passage is for the Christian. He says, I urge you therefore, watch it, brethren. You see, apart from faith in and obedience to Jesus Christ, it is impossible for you to wage war with the world and win. It's an impossibility. You cannot do it. You see, if you try to live above the world and live differently from the crowd and overcome the magnet of the majority without help from God, without help from above, the only thing that will ever happen to you in life is that you will bottom out in frustration. That's all. Because you see, only God can give you the strength of transforming power. Only God can give you the courage of a determinate will. Only God can put within your heart the faith that will enable you to overcome the world and that will give you the courage to stand up for what's right and to do right. In 1 John 5 and verse 4, John said, this is what overcomes the world. This is the victory, even our faith. And so the first thing you need to notice about the passage is that the message is for the Christian. Therefore, brethren. Second, there's an urgency in the message. He says, I urge you, therefore, brethren. Paul's not saying, now listen, by the way, it would be a good idea if you would follow this course of conduct. He's not saying that at all. In fact, he's saying the opposite. This is not an optional course of conduct, course of action. In fact, you can almost see the apostle press his pen to the parchment and say, I urge you, therefore, brethren. Why? Why does he say that? Why does he give the sense of urgency? Because nobody ever eased effortlessly and conveniently out of conformity. It is an urgent request. It demands urgent action. Third, the urgency is related to sacrifice. Notice the passage. He said, I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice. You never sacrifice something easily. The fact that it is a sacrifice says to us that it is important to us. And that releasing it and giving it up and letting it go is not an easy thing to do. That's what makes it a sacrifice. But now notice, the sacrifice is not only holy. He says the sacrifice is living. It is a living sacrifice. Do you know what the problem is with a living sacrifice? The problem with a living sacrifice is that living sacrifices have the tendency to crawl off of the altar. Dead ones can't do that. But living ones do. I know. Because I've crawled off the altar. Have you? Have you committed your life to God? Have you promised to obey God and walk with Him in your life and make your life a sacrifice? And then when push came to shove, when the pressure came to bear, what happened? We crawled off of the altar and we gave in. He says the urgency is related to sacrifice. Number four. I want you to notice from the passage that this sacrifice relates to two realms. It relates to the inner person as well as the outer person. Notice the inner person. He says, I urge you to, watch the word, present your bodies. That is, you've got to make a conscious decision within the inner person, an act of the will, to do what's right. You've got to present your bodies. You've got to do that. But then he says and makes his appeal to the outer person, he says you've got to present your bodies. Notice the emphasis there. The point being, you cannot present the outward self. You can't present the physical. You can't give your body in service to God in doing what's right unless and until you've given Him the inner self. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the greatest act of hypocrisy in the world to serve God in the outward form, to serve God in the flesh, when you haven't given in your heart, when you haven't given in your mind. Jesus said, in vain do these people worship me. And he said, their heart is so far from me. Paul says this sacrifice touches both realms, the outer and the inner. Number five, he says this sacrifice is essentially an act of worship. He said, I urge you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. I want to tell you something. If you're a halfway, lackadaisical, take it or leave it kind of Christian, you don't stand a chance in this world of doing what's right. Because you'll never be able to stand alone when the pressures come to bear. Anybody can sit in victory where we are tonight. Anybody can sit in a fine auditorium like this and sing these songs and pray these prayers and open our Bibles. And any of us tonight can walk in victory in God's service in this church building. That's not hard to do. But the kind of spiritual service of worship that Paul says must come to bear in the life of God's servant affects our lifestyle every day of the year. 52 weeks in the year. You see, Paul is describing commitment. At the deepest level of presenting yourself to God every day. This is something we do every day. Every day is a daily presentation of your life into God's service. Do you know that when you sit down in the lunchroom at work or at school, you are making a presentation of a spiritual service of worship as to how you conduct yourself? And when you go on a date, it's the same. When you go on a 2-week vacation, it's the same. When you have to deal with that obnoxious coworker who obviously cannot stand you and you have and trying to pick a fight with you all of the time and all of that kind of stuff, you are having on that occasion to present yourself as a spiritual service of worship to God then. And when you go to Walmart or Kmart or Ames or whatever it is and you get in the quickie line there to the express lane and you get there and there's some woman in front of you and she's got 33 items, 27 of which do not have a price tag. And then she wants to write a check that has to be cleared with everybody from the FBI, the IRS, the Secret Service, and you name it. Whew, that's tough. How do you react? What do you do in situations like that? I tell you what, you are presenting yourself as a spiritual service of worship to God even in those kinds of situations. You see, it's a daily presentation. It's not a 1 week, 1 day a week affair. It's not a 1 day a week deal. It's an everyday presentation. I wish I could get people to understand that. And then in verse 2, number 6, he says, finally, this sacrifice I'm talking about leads to a radical decision. And do not be conformed to this world. There's one translation that translates that the best I've ever seen. And that is, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. That's exactly what the Apostle Paul is saying. Don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. He's not necessarily here talking about hairstyle or clothing styles or superficial applications like that. He's talking about an entire world system of ungodliness that stands totally opposed to everything that God stands for. It's not cosmetic surgery that Paul is recommending. It is radical reconstruction of your life and my life made over again into the image of His own dear Son. Back in Romans 8 and verse 29, he said, "For whom He foreknew, He also predestined to become conformed to the image of His Son." That is God's goal for your life and mine, to be like Jesus. And so Paul said, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. But then notice verse 2. But be transformed. The word transformed comes from a term from which we get our word metamorphosis. Metamorphosis. You know, when a caterpillar turns into a butterfly, that's metamorphosis. And when that happens, that's no superficial, surface-oriented change at all. That is a total transformation. Now, that's the term used here. You see, when we allow the power of Jesus Christ to come into our lives, the result must be a total change, a total transformation. We change our attitude, we change our character, we change our will, we change our priorities, we change our disposition. It is a change of behavior in life. And where does it start? Where does the change begin? Look at the text. Don't be conformed, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. In other words, in order for there to be a victorious transformation, there must first take place a change of mind. Peter said in 1 Peter 1, verse 13, gird up your mind. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5, Paul said, take every thought captive to Jesus Christ. You've heard the old saying, I'm sure, that you are what you eat. Dom DeLuise said, if I am what I eat, I am a Twinkie. Well, there's something more true than that. And that is, you may be what you eat. I don't know. I won't argue about that. But one thing I know for sure, you are what you think. And the book of Proverbs in chapter 23 and verse 7, he says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. You are what you think. And Paul says we've got to get our thinking in line with Jesus Christ. Only when we have that mind in us, Philippians 2:5, will we be able to have the courage to stand apart and to stand alone, even though we may be outnumbered. You see, conformity will always be out there in the world, inviting us to come on in, appealing to our insecurities, painting a neat, rosy, comfortable picture to us that says, come on in and join us. You don't want to be odd. You don't want to be different. You don't want to be weird. Come and be one of us. After all, you only go around life once. Grab some gusto. Have some fun. Run with the crowd. The advice of the Bible is simple. Don't be conformed. Well, as we look at it, and as we think about the world's mold, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. As you think about the world's mold, there are four things that come to mind. In that I believe the world system is committed to four objectives that play upon our minds and that cause us to conform. I want to give them to you. Four things. Number one, fortune. Money. Materialism. Things. You see, when you make a decision that fortune, that money will not be the controlling mechanism in your life, I'll tell you something, you're going to stand alone. Because the vast majority of people in this country are ruled by materialism, by money. Number two, fame. Popularity, prestige, this longing to be known, longing to be recognized, wanting to be somebody important. And I guess everybody wrestles with that to some degree. Number three, power. Having influence. Maintaining control over the group. And I suppose few things are as tough as overcoming control or the power of peer pressure. Fortune, fame, power. One more, pleasure. Pleasure. This thing that says if it feels good, go and do it. This power of sensuality. You see, the world works overtime, people, to communicate those values of fortune, fame, power, and pleasure. The world works overtime to communicate those values to our kids and to us too. And you know, those values are totally backwards, totally opposite to what God says in His book ought to be. I read a neat little story not too long ago about some prowlers that broke into a department store, and I don't even know where it was, and who were in the store for a long, long time, and then they escaped unnoticed, and they were never captured. But the interesting thing about that was, these guys didn't take anything. They didn't take anything. Instead of stealing, they spent all night in that store rearranging all of the price tags on everything. For example, they'd take a tag off a $395 camera and stick it on a $5 box of stationery. they'd take the sticker off a $5.95 book and put it on an outboard motor. And the craziest part about the whole deal was, the next morning, 9 o'clock, the store opened as usual, all of the employees went to work, customers came in and began to shop, and the store functioned as normal for 4 hours. And I wish my wife would have known about where that was. I mean, some people got great bargains, others got ripped off. Now, we think about that and we think, man, that's hard to believe. I can't hardly believe that. Well, you think about that. I want to tell you something. We live in a society where somebody has slipped in and switched the price tags. Right? We live in a society where thrills go for top dollar and the value of human life is next to nothing. You want an example? I'll give you an example. You let a couple of whales get trapped on the north slope of Alaska, and you see what happens. You see the attention. You see the media focus. You see the world coming together for the great rescue of these two creatures. And yet at the same time, every day, ladies and gentlemen, thousands of unborn babies are just aborted without a blink of the eye. What's happened? Somebody has come into the store and switched all of the price tags. When mothers and fathers spend all of their life in those years in which their children are little, working and having as their God the God of materialism and working to make a living rather than to work to make a life and to build relationships with their kids, thinking they can buy little Junior and little Susie more things and more stuff and more junk. And what they don't realize is little Susie and little Junior, they don't want the stuff and they don't want the junk and they don't want the things. They want mom and dad and a relationship with their parents that they will remember. You see, somebody's come into the store, people, and they switch the price tags. Fortune, fame, power, and pleasure. Now you take your child and you deposit your child into a world system that propagates that kind of value system without any information or help on how to handle it and deal with it and live with it, and it will only be a matter of time until your kid and mine comes to look like, act like, sound like, and think like the world. If your son or daughter has friends who are into profanity, chances are they will be too. The same with immorality, alcohol, drugs. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, bad company corrupts good morals. You see, we have the tendency to be shaped by our peers rather than by God. And those of us who are parents need to wake up. We need to realize the overwhelming power of peer pressure, the herd instinct, the shaping and conforming into the world's mold. The fact is certainly true, all things being equal. Good will not rub off on bad. Bad will rub off on good. It's like putting on a pair of white gloves and going out and digging in the mud. I want to tell you something. The mud never does get glovy. But the gloves will always get muddy. You've never seen glovy mud in your life. It's easy to get muddy. It's easy to run with the crowd. It's easy to conform. But it takes courage, people. It takes backbone. It takes conviction to stand up and to be different and to say, no, I belong to God. Now I want you to go back quickly as we close to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let's make an application. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 10, you have an old scene with a modern message. The new generation of Hebrews have just reached to the edge of the promised land. They've spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness, having to bury their parents who doubted and did not trust in God's ability. And now just before entering the promised land, Moses pulls the people aside. And although Moses is not going to be able to go into the promised land, he loves these people too much to simply step aside and let them cross on their own. And so, like a father giving his kids advice, Moses talks to these young people, beginning in verse 10 of Deuteronomy 6. Then it shall come about, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your father Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you shall eat and be satisfied. Then watch yourself, lest you forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name, and you shall not follow other gods, any of the gods of the peoples who surround you. For the Lord your God in the midst of you is a jealous God. Now, don't think for one moment that God doesn't care about his people. Like a protective parent, he points to the dangers that they were fixing to face. How easy it would have been for Israel to follow the wrong role models. How easy it would be for Israel to forget who it was who had given them the roof over their heads, the food that they had to eat, the keys to the camel, we might say. How easy it would be to forget. And Moses says, young people, you're fixing to go into this new land. And he said, you're going to be tempted to go along with the crowd. He says, don't yield to peer pressure. He says, don't follow the herd. Maintain your distinctiveness. Hold on to courage. Now, why is he telling them all of this? Well, I wrote down three principles, three reasons. The first is, getting something for nothing breeds irresponsibility. That's why he says, watch. Verse 11 and 12, they're getting cities which they did not build, houses which they did not build, which you did not fill, which you did not dig, which you did not plant. All of these things are going to be given to them by God, and the temptation for them would be, who needs God? Look at all of the things that we have. Who needs God? It's the spoiled child syndrome of too many toys, too much luxury, too easily acquired, and it becomes just the breeding ground for irresponsibility. I take my little boy to Kmart. We walk around and he spots those remote control cars. And he always sees the expensive ones. And he looks at that and he says, Dad, I want that. I want that, Dad. And I took one look at the price tag and saw it was $79.95. And I decided right then and there to get down on one knee, you know, and give him the old, son, Dad can't buy you everything you want, only what you need speech. So I went through all that with him, the whole nine yards, and I looked into his little face and I said, son, do you understand what Dad's trying to tell you? And he said, yeah, Dad, I do. And I got up, started to walk away, and he pulled up my coat, and he said, Dad, and he pointed to that remote control car, he said, I need that. Oh, we see it all of the time. We think we need everything. And in America, we have the tendency to get pretty much what we want. And it becomes a breeding ground, you see, for irresponsibility. And second, irresponsibility breeds carelessness. We become careless about our attitudes, about our values. We begin to say to ourselves, well, you know, what difference does it make if I drink a little bit or use a little language with the buddies at work or flirt with my secretary or play the lottery or cheat on my income tax or whatever it is. What difference does it make? And third, carelessness finally, in the final analysis, leads to a total loss of standards. You see, the Hebrews went into the land and they were surrounded by a majority of people who worshipped other gods. And if they were careless with their standards, they would end up embracing the lifestyle of these pagan people. And that's exactly what happened to them. Now you think about it. What Moses is pointing out to these people is just as timely to you and I today as it was then. You think about today. Here's a son, here's a daughter, raised by godly parents who really care, brought up in a good church, surrounded by good people who love the Lord. Here's a kid who gets all of the breaks. So why is this kid on drugs? Why is this kid into profanity? Why is this kid into drinking or lying? Why has he lost his spiritual values? I tell you why. Because the world sucked him in, just like the world sucked in those Hebrew people. You see, that generation is really no different from this generation in that they forgot God and they let the world squeeze them into its mold. So how can I overcome? How can I win the battle? How can I stand alone? As we close this evening, I want to give you four mind-renewing thoughts. Paul said, don't be conformed, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I want to give you four mind-renewing thoughts. And I'd like to ask that you jot these down and keep them handy and refer back to them. Four thoughts. You want to have the courage to stand and to stand alone? You remember these things. Number one, I am responsible. Do you know there will be times in your life when you'll be places where nobody else will be around that knows you? No parents, no wife, no husband, no Christians. A place where there's no reputation for you to uphold because nobody knows who you are. That's when you've got to work very hard on renewing your mind. That's when you remind yourself, I am responsible before God above all else. Number two, I must not forget. Remember what Moses told the people of Israel? He said, watch yourself lest you forget. You see, we cannot afford to forget the Lord and the fact that we belong to Him and that we are His and the price that was paid for us. I am responsible. I must not forget. And number three, I am accountable. I want to tell you something. You are accountable before God. Whether or not you sit in a church building in Washington, D.C., or in Payton City, West Virginia, or you sit in an airplane seat 32,000 feet in the sky, or you sit down at the cafeteria at school, or you walk the walkways or the halls at the PPG plant up the road, it doesn't make any difference where you are responsible before Him. I am accountable. And number four, Jesus Christ sets my standards. Jesus Christ sets my standards. Not my friend, not my business associate, not my neighbor, not even me. Jesus Christ is the only sure thing. He determines my standards. Let's read our verse one more time. 1 Corinthians 16:13. Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage to think alone, to resist alone, to stand alone, especially when the going along with the crowd seems so safe. But you remember something. You remember that when you walk with God, it doesn't just seem safe. It is safe. And it's the only safe way to go. God help us to have the courage to stand alone. And God help us to remember what the Apostle Paul said in Romans 8.
in verse 31 that if God is for us, who can be against us? And I'll tell you something, folks. If God is for us, it doesn't make any difference who's against us. Over in the book of 2 Chronicles, chapter 15, beginning in verse 1, now the Spirit of God came on Azariah, the son of Oded, and he went out to meet Asa and said unto him, listen to me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you when you are with him. And if you seek him, he will let you find him. But if you forsake him, he will forsake you. Now listen to him in verse 7. But you be strong and do not lose courage, for there is reward for your work. May God be with all of us as we try to live the Christian life. And it's difficult at times. It's difficult for me. We've got to keep trying, and we've got to keep working, and we've got to keep growing. You're here this evening and you're not a Christian, and you never have responded to the invitation of Jesus. I suppose one of the toughest things that anybody ever suggests to anyone is for people to sing an invitation song and for you to get out of your seat and walk down the aisle, down to the front. And that takes courage to do that. That takes courage to come in front of people and to make acknowledgement or let it be known that you want to be a Christian. That takes a lot of courage. And yet this evening I'm asking you to get that courage. If you need to somehow to just instill the courage in just a moment and to step out and to come, please, in the innermost part of your being, please find the courage, because there's no better time to do it than now. The first night of the gospel meeting, we'll spend all week together. And wouldn't it be great if you could spend the entire week in a study of God's Word, having obeyed the very first night, and to be a Christian? If you need to do that tonight, if you need to respond to this invitation song, don't worry about who's sitting here, who's not sitting here, who's watching you, and who's not watching you. You just get the courage, and you come and say, I want to be a Christian. And you can be tonight. If you're willing to repent and turn from your sin, confess your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, and be baptized. If you need to respond, won't you come? I'll be standing and singing.